Okay, so picture this. You're a detective working this really bizarre case. You get a tip about this guy, a mathematician of all things,
Oh, wow.
and he's renting an office right above a bank vault.
Interesting.
But here's the thing. He's not bringing in desks and computers, you know, the usual office stuff. He's got drills, acetylene tanks, even a blowtorch. Then suddenly he disappears, vanishes before he even gets into the vault.
Wow, what happened?
So the question is, could this guy still get hit with a crime even though he never actually got inside the bank?
Well, that's a great question, and it brings up this really fascinating legal concept.
Okay.
It's the whole question of when does preparing for a crime actually become attempting to commit a crime?
The line between thought and action.
Right. It's a question that's been bugging courts for centuries.
Yeah, I bet.
And this case we're diving into today, People v. Staples from 1970,
Okay.
it really changed how we look at that blurry line between getting ready and actually trying to commit a crime.
So we've got this mathematician, Edmund Staples, and his almost heist. What was it about this case that made it so important? I mean, people must chicken out of crimes all the time, right?
You'd think so, but the Staples case is anything but ordinary.
Okay.
Really, it all comes down to this legal concept called attempt.
Right,
In the
attempt.
simplest terms, attempt basically means you tried to commit a crime,
Okay.
but you didn't quite get it done.
You didn't get to finish.
And the big challenge for the courts is figuring out when someone's actions cross over that line from just getting ready to actually trying to commit the crime.
Okay, so intent and action, those are the keys here.
Exactly.
But where do we actually draw that line?
Right?
Like, at what point does buying supplies or
Yeah.
even scouting out a location, you know, casing the joint,
Mm-hmm.
when does that become something that the law sees as an actual attempted crime?
So that's where things get a little tricky.
Yeah, but.
Courts have come up with these tests. Things like the dangerous proximity test and the unequivocality test.
Okay, those sound pretty intense.
They sound like they're straight out of a law school textbook,
Right.
but they basically boil down to this.
Okay.
How close were you to actually pulling off the crime? And did your actions make it totally obvious that you were going to do it?
So, was there any doubt about what you were up to?
Exactly.
Okay, so let's bring it back to our mathematician. How did these tests actually apply to his case? I mean, he rented that office, brought in some pretty serious equipment,
He did.
but he didn't actually get into the vault. So, was that enough to actually get him convicted of attempted burglary?
Well, to understand that, we have to look at California Penal Code, Section 459.
Right.
It defines burglary as entering a structure with the intent to commit theft or any other felony.
Okay.
So, to try and attempt burglary,
Right.
you've got to at least start the breaking and entering part. Think of it this way. Buying a crowbar, that's just preparation,
Because
right?
you're just getting ready.
But the second you jam that crowbar into a door and start prying it open, that's when it becomes an attempt.
Oh, okay, so the action.
And in Staples, those drill holes he made in the floor,
Okay.
those were like his crowbar in the door moment.
I see. That's a great way to think about it.
Thanks.
So the court basically decided that those holes were enough to show that he had started to break in, even though he never actually reached the vault itself. But did it matter that he stopped?
That's a great question.
Like, did that change anything legally?
And that's what makes this case so interesting. The California Court of Appeal was very clear about their reasons for convicting Staples.
All right.
And one of their big points was this thing they called spatial intent.
Spatial intent. Okay.
Basically, they were saying that the fact that Staples specifically chose to rent the office right above the vault,
Oh, right above it.
that showed a deliberate and targeted intent.
Like he meant to be there.
Exactly. And that combined with those very specific tools he bought,
The drills, the blowtorch.
It all painted a pretty clear picture of what he was planning to do.
So his choice of location and those tools, it was all very deliberate.
Exactly. It wasn't just random chance that he ended up above that vault with all that
It
equipment.
all fit together.
And here's where it gets really interesting.
Okay.
Especially for any lawyers or law students listening in,
Okay.
the court actually said that the fact that Staples stopped
He stopped
his
him.
so-called change of heart, that didn't really matter legally.
Oh, wow.
Once the attempt is made, even if you back out, you still committed the crime of attempt.
So you can't just undo it.
In the eyes of the law, there's no undo button.
Wow, no take backs in California, huh?
Pretty much.
That seems pretty strict.
Well, there are some nuances there.
Yeah.
But the court's main point was that the danger was already there.
The danger was already present.
Staples' actions, even though he stopped, they created a risk. And that brings us to another really crucial point from this case.
Okay.
Harm, or even completing the crime, that's not actually required for a conviction of attempt.
Really?
What really matters is how dangerous the act itself was.
So even if no one gets hurt, the act itself is enough.
Yeah, it's about the potential for danger.
Okay, that makes sense.
So in this case, drilling into a bank floor, even though he didn't get any money,
right,
that was still seen as a dangerous act.
Step towards something really bad happening.
Exactly. And to really make that point clear, the court actually said, and I quote, "The law doesn't require police to wait until the torch touches the vault door."
Wow, that's a pretty powerful statement.
They were making it very clear that they weren't going to just sit around and wait for a crime to actually happen,
right,
especially if they saw clear signs that someone was trying to commit one.
So even though Staples might have gotten cold feet,
yeah,
the court was more focused on that potential danger his actions created.
Exactly.
But there's still one thing that's bugging me.
Okay, what's that?
How did they know for sure that Staples was actually planning to rob the bank?
Right.
What if he was just, you know, doing some kind of weird math experiment down there?
Well, that's where another key piece of evidence comes in.
Okay.
Staples actually wrote a confession.
He confessed.
Yeah, he detailed his whole plan.
Wow.
And for the prosecutors, that was like hitting the jackpot.
I bet.
It gave them clear evidence of his intent.
Ah, so it wasn't just speculation anymore.
Right. It transformed what might have seemed like ambiguous actions, you know, renting the office, buying the tools, into clear signs of attempted burglary.
Because now they had his own words to back it up.
Exactly. So even though there was no direct evidence of him actually breaking into the vault,
right,
his confession, together with his actions, sealed the deal.
Wow. It's amazing how a confession can completely change the game.
It really can.
Even in a case where the crime wasn't actually committed.
Absolutely. And this is a really important point for anyone working on criminal defense cases.
Okay, what's that?
You have to be very careful about how actions that happened before the attempted crime.
Right, the lead up to it.
How those can be interpreted.
Mm.
A good defense attorney might have argued that actions taken before the drilling started.
Okay.
Like renting the office or even buying the tools.
Right.
Those didn't necessarily point to a criminal attempt.
So they could have argued that those actions were open to interpretation.
Exactly. There's always room for legal maneuvering.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to something as complex as proving intent.
I can imagine.
But the Staples case really highlights how carefully prosecutors can use a confession to link seemingly innocent actions to a criminal plan.
Right, because those actions might seem innocent on their own.
Exactly.
But with the confession, it all clicks into place.
Right. It's a good reminder that every single piece of evidence matters.
Yeah, every detail.
And the way it's presented.
Right, how you put it all together.
That can make all the difference.
This is all so fascinating.
It is, isn't it?
I feel like we've only just started to scratch the surface of this case.
Yeah, there's so much more to explore.
All its legal implications.
Absolutely.
But before we go any further, I think it's time to take a closer look at the actual decision in People v. Staples.
Yes, let's dive into that.
What were the specific points that the court relied on to convict him?
That's what we'll get into next.
All right, so we've got the scene, set a mathematician with a plan,
an
almost burglary, and then that confession that really sealed the deal.
Mm-hmm.
But let's actually break down the court's decision in People v. Staples point by point.
Okay.
What were the specific things that actually led to his conviction?
So the California Court of Appeal, they really laid out their reasoning.
Yeah.
And there are four main points that really stand out.
Okay, four key points.
The first one, they emphasize this idea of spatial intent.
Spatial intent.
Yeah, remember how we talked about how important it was that Staples chose that office right above the vault?
Right, that specific location.
That's exactly what the court zeroed in on.
Interesting.
They said that choosing that spot, plus all those tools he had.
Yeah, the specialized tool.
Right. It all pointed to a very specific intent to burglarize the bank.
So the location you choose, it can actually say a lot about your intent.
Exactly. It's not just what you do, but where you do it.
Hmm. That makes sense.
And that brings us to the second point the court made.
Okay, what's that?
The fact that Staples stopped drilling, it didn't change the fact that he had already committed attempted burglary.
Oh, wow. So stopping didn't matter.
This is huge for anyone studying criminal law.
Yeah, I bet.
Because it establishes this really important principle.
Okay.
Once you make the attempt, even if you change your mind, even if you back out, you've still committed that crime of attempt.
So there's no buyer's remorse in the eyes of the law.
It's tough, right?
It seems pretty harsh, especially if someone genuinely has a change of heart.
Yeah. And it's important to remember that California law, it's different from the model penal code.
Okay, how so?
The model penal code, it actually gives you a bit more leeway when it comes to abandoning a criminal attempt.
Well, so it's more forgiving.
But in California, the court was basically sending a message.
What message?
You can't just hit the undo button once you've taken that substantial step towards committing a crime.
No take backs.
Right.
Okay, so the court was saying even if Staples suddenly felt guilty,
yeah,
it wouldn't erase those steps he'd already taken.
Exactly.
He had already started down that path toward burglarizing the bank.
And their reason for this, it gets to the heart of the third point they made.
Okay, what was that?
The focus should be on how dangerous the act itself was.
Okay.
Not whether the harm actually happened.
So it's not about the outcome, it's about the potential.
It doesn't matter if Staples got into the vault or if he stole any money.
It's the act itself.
The fact that he drilled into that bank floor, that created a risk.
Right.
A potential for danger, and that was enough.
Wow, so even if he didn't get away with anything,
it's about the danger he created.
It's still a crime.
Exactly, and to really hammer this home,
wow,
they used this really powerful analogy in their decision.
What was it?
They said, the law doesn't require police to wait until the torch touches the vault door.
Ooh, that's a good one. They're not messing around.
They're making it clear that they're not going to wait around for something bad to happen.
Right. They're being proactive.
Especially if they see obvious signs that someone's about to commit a crime.
So even if Staples got cold feet, the court was more concerned with the danger of what he did.
Right. It's about prevention.
But hold on. There's one piece I'm still not getting.
Okay.
How did the court know for sure that he was interrupted while he was drilling?
Right.
What if no one actually saw him doing it?
Good point, and that's where the court's fourth point comes in.
Right.
They admitted that there was no direct evidence that anyone saw him drilling.
Yeah.
But they allowed for what they called reasonable inference.
Reasonable inference, okay.
They basically said that the fact the landlord found the tools and called the cops, that was basically the same as if the police had intervened.
So even though no one saw him drilling,
right,
the circumstances made it pretty clear what was going on.
Exactly.
It's like connecting the dots.
Right. You don't need to see the whole picture to understand what happened.
So those four points, they all work together to explain the court's decision.
Right. They emphasized intent, the fact that stopping didn't matter, the focus on the danger of the act itself,
right,
and then using reasonable inference to fill in those gaps in the evidence.
It's amazing how a case from 1970 involving a mathematician and a drill can still be so relevant today.
It really is.
But I can already hear some of our listeners thinking,
okay,
all right, interesting legal theory, but how does this actually apply to my work?
Right. How does this affect lawyers in the real world?
Exactly.
That's a great question, and it's one we should definitely talk about.
Okay, let's do that.
The Staples decision, it's had a big impact.
In what way?
On how both prosecutors and defense attorneys approach these cases.
When someone is accused of attempting a crime.
Exactly. For prosecutors, it shows how important it is to present evidence in the right order.
Okay, how so?
Starting with that confession to establish intent.
Right, to show what the person was thinking.
And then they bring in physical evidence, expert testimony.
To back it all up.
To really make the case for attempted burglary.
So it's not just about showing that the defendant did something.
Right.
It's about connecting their actions to their intent.
It's got to be clear that they meant to commit that crime.
And for defense attorneys, what does Staples mean for them?
Well, it presents some challenges.
How so?
They have to find ways to challenge that substantial step evidence.
Okay, the evidence that shows the person was really trying to commit the crime.
They might argue that actions taken before the actual attempt, like renting the office or buying tools, those were open to interpretation.
That they didn't prove criminal intent.
Right. And they might also try to use mitigation strategies based on voluntary abandonment.
Like arguing that the person stopped on their own?
Exactly. Even though, as we talked about, that's not a guaranteed defense in California.
Right. It might not work.
But it's something they can try.
So it's this constant legal battle.
Yeah.
With prosecutors building their case for attempt and defense attorneys looking for any weaknesses.
It's a game of strategy.
But there's one big question I keep coming back to.
Okay, what's that?
How does a case like Staples, which involved a physical act, like drilling,
Yeah.
How does that apply to our world today, where so much crime is online?
That's one of the most fascinating and challenging parts of criminal law today.
I bet.
How do we take these old legal concepts
that were developed before the internet?
Exactly, and apply them to cybercrime?
It's a whole new world out there.
Courts are still figuring this out.
Yeah, it's uncharted territory.
But Staples gives us a good framework to think about these issues.
So even though Staples was about a drill and a bank vault, it can help us understand how the law can adapt to new kinds of crime.
Absolutely.
It's like a blueprint for the future of criminal law.
And to really show what I mean.
Yeah.
Let's imagine a different scenario.
Okay.
What if instead of drilling into the vault,
yeah,
Staples used his math skills to create a hacking program?
To break into the bank's computers.
And steal money that way.
Would that still be considered attempted burglary?
Or would it be something else entirely?
That's a really good question.
It is, isn't it?
Is writing code like drilling into a vault?
Where do we draw that line between preparation and attempt in the digital world?
That's something we need to figure out.
These are the questions that legal minds are grappling with right now.
And it's just getting more complicated.
And while Staples might not have all the answers,
yeah,
it helps us understand how to apply those traditional legal ideas to a world that's constantly changing.
So it's a starting point.
It reminds us that the law isn't stuck in the past.
It has to evolve.
It's dynamic. It has to adapt to new challenges.
It's like Staples planted a seed.
A seed that keeps growing.
That's still shaping our legal system today.
And it will for years to come.
But before we get too lost in the digital world,
okay,
let's step back for a minute.
Okay.
What are the key takeaways from Staples?
The big lessons.
That every lawyer and law student should really remember.
That's a great question. And I think if we boil Staples down to its essence, there are three major takeaways.
Okay, three things to remember.
That are crucial for anyone practicing law or studying to become a lawyer.
All right, let's hear them.
The first one is this attempt is about directional acts.
Directional acts.
It's not just about how close you get to completing the crime.
So not just proximity, but purposefulness.
Exactly. It's not enough to be in the right place at the right time.
Your actions have to be aimed at committing the crime.
Staples drilling, it wasn't just him setting up his tools.
Right, it wasn't random.
It was a direct step towards his goal of burglarizing that bank.
Even though he never got to the vault.
Those drill holes, they were like a smoking gun.
They showed what he was trying to do.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes sense. What's the second takeaway?
Confessions can be incredibly powerful for the prosecution.
Oh yeah, they can really change things.
Staples admitted his intent in writing.
Right, he wrote it all down.
And that transformed what might have seemed like innocent actions.
Like renting the office and buying the tools.
Into clear evidence of attempted burglary.
It's like that saying, if you're going to do something wrong, don't write it down.
Exactly. A confession can make or break a case.
Especially when you're trying to prove intent.
And that brings us to the third takeaway.
Okay, what's number three?
This one's especially important for defense attorneys.
Okay, tell us.
Changing your mind after you've attempted a crime, it doesn't necessarily mean you're off the hook.
You mean it like, oops, I decided not to rob the bank after all.
Right. California law, unlike the model penal code, it doesn't have a get-out-of-jail-free card for abandoning a crime after you've already taken a big step towards doing it.
So even though Staples walked away,
yeah,
those earlier actions were enough to convict him.
Exactly. That's a really crucial difference.
So even if you have a change of heart, the law might still hold you accountable.
Right. It shows how seriously the law takes attempts.
Especially when those attempts could cause harm.
Well, like in the Staples case.
So it's really important to understand the specifics of the law.
In your jurisdiction, yeah.
All right, so People v. Staples, it's more than just a legal puzzle.
It is.
It's a case with real consequences for anyone involved in the criminal justice system.
For sure.
But as we wrap up our deep dive,
okay,
I want to leave our listeners with one final question to think about.
All right, shoot.
If the plan for a crime is enough to consider it the crime itself, where do we draw the line?
Yeah.
In a world where ideas and plans are shared so easily.
Wow, that's a deep one.
The question that really makes us think about the limits of criminal law.
It really does. It's like we're in this gray area,
yeah,
where thoughts and actions start to blend together.
But before we get too lost in the abstract,
okay,
I think it's important to remember.
What's that?
People. VZ Staples. This wasn't just some theoretical legal debate.
Right.
It was a real case with a real person at the center of it.
It was Edmund Staples' life.
And his story reminds us that the law isn't just about abstract principles or legal precedents.
It's about people.
It's about the choices they make.
And the consequences of those choices.
Exactly. And in Staples' case, his decision to drill those holes, even though he stopped,
it set off this whole chain of events
that led to his conviction.
It really highlights what we've been talking about.
The law often focuses on the act itself.
Whether or not the intended harm actually happened.
It's like the legal system is saying, we're not going to wait around to see if you actually follow through.
Right. We're not taking any chances.
If your actions show you're trying to commit a crime, that's enough for us to step in.
It's about preventing harm before it happens.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into People v. Staples.
Okay.
What's the one big thought you want to leave our listeners with?
I think the most important thing to remember about Staples is that it's a case that keeps on giving.
How so?
It's a starting point for all these discussions.
About what?
About intent, about action, about the boundaries of criminal law.
And as technology keeps changing
and
new types of crime emerge,
Staples will still be irrelevant.
It's a guide for navigating that uncharted territory.
Absolutely. It reminds us that the law isn't static.
It's always changing.
It's a living, breathing thing.
It's constantly being shaped by new cases.
And People v. Staples, with all its fascinating facts and legal implications, it's a case that will keep people talking for years to come.
It's a case that stands the test of time.
Exactly.
Well, on that note, I think it's time to wrap up this episode of The Deep Dive.
Okay.
We hope you've enjoyed exploring People v. Staples with us.
It's been a great discussion.
And until next time, keep those legal minds sharp. And stay curious.
Always stay curious.
Yeah, it really makes you think about the human side of these legal battles.
It does. We get so caught up in the arguments and the decisions.
Yeah, the legal back and forth.
It's easy to forget that there was a real person.
A real person whose life was affected.
Edmund Staples, his life changed because of this case.
It's a good reminder that the law isn't just about abstract ideas.
Right. It's not just about principles and precedents.
It's about people.
Real people making choices.
And facing the consequences of those choices.
Exactly. And for Staples, that choice to drill those holes.
Even though he stopped.
It set this whole thing in motion.
And ultimately led to his conviction.
It goes back to what we've been saying.
About the law focusing on the act itself.
Regardless of whether the harm actually happened.
Oh, the intent is what matters.
It's like the legal system is drawing a line.
Yeah.
Saying, we're not waiting to see if you actually go through with it. If your actions show you're trying to commit a crime, we're stepping in.
It's about preventing harm before it even happens.
It's about being proactive.
So as we wrap up our deep dive into People v. Staples.
Okay.
What's that one big idea you want to leave our listeners with?
I think the biggest takeaway from Staples is that it's a case that keeps on giving.
What do you mean by that?
It's a starting point for so many important conversations.
About intent, about action, about the limits of the law.
Exactly. And as technology changes.
And we see new kinds of crime.
Staples will still be relevant.
It can help us navigate that new landscape.
It reminds us that the law is always evolving.
It's not stuck in the past.
It's a living thing, constantly being shaped by new cases.
And People v. Staples with all its interesting facts.
Yeah.
Its lasting legal impact.
It's a case that will keep people thinking for a long time.
It's a landmark case.
It really is.
Well said. And on that note, I think it's time to wrap up this episode of The Deep Dive.
Sounds good.
We hope you've enjoyed this exploration of People v. Staples with us.
It's been a pleasure.
Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp and stay curious.
Stay curious out there.